Yippee! Yippee! Yippee!
Listen, let the title of this thing. Don't title again.
Anda de lo le di el edu.
Is it rolling, Bob?
Chick, chick, chick. Hello, folks, and welcome to Dick's Jade's podcast. Oh, my God, 780-fucking-8. Jesus. Yeah, it is Sunday evening, just after 9 p.m., being the 3rd, 2020. And I'm lying on my back in the road truck. It's not the best position to be podcasting from. Most people would not recommend that. But, hey, it's the Dixon Jade's podcast. And we fucking well do things the way we like on this show. So, there you go. It's goddamn comfortable. And cozy and such a nice escape. I was feeling pretty tense most of the day. When I think about it, you know, if I was going to give a number, I'd give Teddy a 5 out of 10. And that's not very high at all. And I couldn't say exactly. Just, again, maybe just feeling a little grumpy and short-tempered. And I guess, you know, little things. You know, the health shit I talk about all the time. Just starting to wear me down. Just starting to make me feel, hey, for fuck's sake, I am getting old. I sat in the park for quite a while this afternoon. I did another 25-minute walk. And I end up at this bench all by myself in just off to the left of the soccer field, or to the right, depending which way you're facing. Facing my house and that line of beautiful, beautiful weeping willow trees. And it's a lovely spot to just to sit, to listen to a podcast, or to talk to you, the listener. And just reflect a little bit. But today's reflection was, God damn it, I'm old. And I'm starting to think about the future, what's ahead. I mean, I know I'm supposed to be. And I've managed to get through most of my life without making plans. With, you know, not mapping things out. You know, people asked me about, you know, about getting married and planning children. No, we just did it, man. Found the woman I wanted to marry, and we married, and didn't even think about, you know, kids or timing or anything else. Just happened to have two boys born 2 years apart, and both born in Japan. But none of that was mapped out. Nothing was. I've had the luxury of being able to live my life sort of as it comes. I mean, that was the exciting thing to do in your youth. But I guess as you get older and you start realizing, God, someday I might start to be dependent on more people for my very survival. And I don't want to think that way, and I don't want to be in that position. But it's like, you know, my wife will retire in a couple of years, and she's doing all the work around the house. You know, today she worked all day. And, you know, there's some things, you know, I'm tripping over myself. My balance is off. It's, you know, these are, I'm not saying these as excuses. I'm just saying that she's always been this bundle of energy. It's her nature. She has to, the way my nature is to be lazy and do nothing and just lie there, sip on a beer, read a book, listen to music. Her nature is to get things done. So tonight, right up till 6 o'clock, she was out in the back yard sawing pieces of wood from a tree she'd cut down. And I can do that. I can do it. Leave it. You know, and I guess it pissed me off because I felt she could have just told me to do it. And I would have done it. Could have done it. I was sort of feeling she's being a bit of a martyr. You know, but she wasn't. She just wanted to get things done. Oh, boy. How to get onto that? Well, anyway, so, you know, 2 years from now, she's not going to want to continue to be doing the one running the house, you know, indoors and out. And I'm looking at this house from this bench. I'm looking back and thinking, fuck, man, this is such a great location. I don't want to leave here. And I'm thinking things like, you know, letting her fly off. Go wherever you want to go. Go out west to start. Visit her son and take a long holiday. You've earned it. And maybe I'll take in a boarder or two to, you know, cover some costs. And that's not really, I don't know. I don't think that's a very practical way of thinking. But I guess there's a part of me not wanting to have to face the realities of, hey, eventually, buddy, you got to make a change. And I just don't know what that change is. I look out, you know, at this road track that I'm in now, at the front driveway. I think, well, God damn, you can live in that, man. But, yeah, for how long? Well, people do it. But, yeah, is that really, what, how you, wow. Think about this, buddy. And I can't, and I don't want to. And so I guess that's part of the reason the day only got a 5 out of 10, thinking about things I don't want to think about. But know that sooner or later, I'm going to have to. It's just that I've been able to get through my whole life by my own rules. Like, honestly, you know, I have done it my way. Everything. And I'm pretty reluctant at this point to have to surrender, to give in, to go along with somebody else's plans for me. Let's just park that. Didn't know I was going to go there, but I guess that's, you know, it's the things about this show. It's the things that are bottling up inside are going to rise to the surface, and there you go. So I guess a lot of it is just because of the physical hardships I'm going through now, the hand, the carpal tunnel, the aching knee, the pokey walks I take. It's a reminder, man, you're getting old. And again, it's just a number, 72, but there does come a time that, well, wait a minute now, 72 is fucking old, you know? You try to say, well, I don't feel old, and mentally I don't, physically I do. Mentally, I'm still that guy in his 30s, you know? I'm still, I'm in control, man. But the reality is maybe something quite different. Yeah, gotta shake this. All right, where else do you want to go? I didn't put on any music. Oh, I know. The thought, and it's connected, that I'd be a happier person if I just toked up more often, if I just had a little toke. And I don't know why I don't do it more often. It puts me in a nice place. It chills me, mellows me out, gets me listening to music. I see the positive things and good things. I don't go wacky crazy. It puts me in a really nice place, and yet some reason around home, I don't seem to do that. So I got gummy bears right in the fridge just a few feet away from me. But hell, it's 9 after 9 at night. I'm not going to start now. But I think I should actually put in an online order. Send me some of those gummy bears because I think they make me a better person. I've got a couple of vaporizers. I've got liquid. I've got, some nice, very nice strong weed. I've got pipes. I've got all kinds of ways of doing it, but I just don't do it. So I don't know what that's all about. One more thought. And it came to me today, the thought that if the Scarborough dude was really, really, if I could pass it off as a real persona, but not really connected to kin, if it was somebody else that I could talk through and say things that I want to say without it being a reflection, I know that kin is a real asshole, a real bastard, you know. In other words, tell some truths that I don't want to share because I don't want it to get back to kin. So I don't know. I can't say what I'm hiding. It's just that if there's integrity, to me, integrity means really telling the truth, warts and all. And remember I mentioned that in my church. I gave a presentation of when I first joined the church about Nigeria, and I had done a proper job, and it was censored. It was very, very, it went over really well. I got a lot of good feedback from it. But I felt, hey, I didn't talk about the whoring that I mentioned last time or the, you know, the drunken behavior, lots of things I didn't talk about that were also true. And where am I going with this? I think I used to think the Scarborough dude was I could use that as a front to say anything. But now that Ken and the Scarborough dude are one and the same, it's a little harder. It's a little harder. So, yeah, I'm going to stop there. I've said more than enough. I'll give you a tune. I do have a plan coming up. Stay tuned. I'll let you know when I get started. I won't say anything about it yet, but I know the little podcasting project that I'm looking forward to. All right, you dragged that out of me. I'm going to do a couple of shows on country music. Not country music, but cowboy music, the music that I like. And that'll be coming up real soon. And you can listen to that where you listen to your other Corona Palooza podcast. So stay tuned. And I've already picked out the tunes. I'm not going to play them here. But yeah, you'll hear all about it. Scarborough Dude, signing off from the back of the road truck on a Sunday night. Feeling a little better just for lying down here and letting off just a little bit of steam. Bye for now.
For years and years I've rambled, drank my wines and gambled, but one day I thought I'd settle down. I met a perfect lady, she said she'd be my baby. We built a cottage in the old hometown. The old lady, hey, lady, old lady, hey, lady. But somehow I can't forget my good old rambling days. The railroad trains are calling me always. I may be rough and I may be wild, I may be tough and counted vile, but I can't give up my good old rough and rowdy ways. De-o-de-lady, 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 de-o-de-lady. De-o-de-lady, de-o-de-lady, de-o-de-lady. Sometimes I meet a bounder that knew me when I was a rounder. He grabs my hand and says, boy, have a drink. We go down to the pool room, get in the game, and then soon the daylight comes before I've had a wink. Yodel-lady, hey-del-lady, ho-del-lady, hi-del-lady. But somehow I can't forget my good old rambling days. The railroad trains are calling me always. I may be rough and I may be wild, I may be tough and counted vile, but I can't give up my good old rough and rowdy ways. De-o-de-lady, 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 de-o-de-lady.
Okay, ready or not, Scarborough Dude, back in the road track, but this time I'm sitting in the front passenger seat facing the back. This is kind of nice because I can see anybody in the neighborhood walking up and down the sidewalk or, you know, if I wanted to look at something. It's nice. It's nice. My cat is not with me today. She enjoyed a good party yesterday up on the roof of the car next to the road track, my wife's Mazda. and then cried to get in here, and then we spent a very pleasant part of the afternoon in the road trek together, her having a little nap. And there's so many soft places for her to sit down. You know, I got a sleeping bag out and big pillows. And anyway, that was nice. We've just had a little nap. And now I've got things to get on with. I noticed Tennessee Jason in his last podcast didn't have any show notes. So I've doubled down, taken up the slack, and I have prepared show notes. I know some of the things I'm going to talk about. Starting with the song we just heard. That was called My Rough and Rowdy Ways. Any guesses on who that was? Did anybody guess Jimmy Rogers? Very good. If you did, I doubt you did. But I put that in there as a sample of the kind of music I'm going to be playing on my Coronapalooza Cowboy Cast. Because that's cowboy music to me. That's stuff I heard as a child. Now, I didn't hear that when it first came out because, can you guess when that first came out? You won't believe it. 1929. Just incredible. But that stuff I heard, I mean, we lived in Valleyfield, so there's probably local, you know, country and western stuff would have been played on the radio there, too. This is outside Montreal. And, of course, I don't want to go too much into it because I want to save that for when I actually start preparing the podcast or introducing the songs. Got my songs picked out, added a new one yesterday. But that song, the words fit beautifully. For years and years, I've rambled, drank my wine and gambled, but one day I thought I'd settle down. I met a perfect lady. She said she'd be my baby. We built a cottage in the old hometown, but somehow I can't forget my good old rambling days. The railroad trains are calling me away. Now that's cowboy to me. The freedom of being a cowboy, you know, and the trains has got it, you know. The next verse, maybe even more. I may be rough, I may be wild, I may be tough and countrified, but I can't give up my good old rough and rowdy ways. Sometimes I need a bounder who knew me when I was a rounder. He grabs my hand and says, boy, have a drink. Boy, yeah. We go down to the pool room, get in the gang, and then soon the daylight comes before I'd had a wink. But somehow I can't forget. Now, that's just perfect. Whether you like country music or not, I know Glenn does. Glenn, thank you. There's probably going to be more of this. But that was just a perfect find. And I chose that one because that's not going to be on my my podcast. Now, what else did I have to say? There's going to be another clip following this, and that is the apology coming from Keith McNally, who some of you may know from way back in the day of Keith and the Girl. He was the other Keith, the Canadian Keith. And I think if you listened a few episodes ago, you would have heard me playing a clip from him talking about nobody cares, dude, nobody cares, you know, you're boring going on and so on. And I talked about that and worked that out in the course of the podcast, and that's all, you know, I was laughing by the end of it, all is well. But he said next time he did a viral countdown podcast, and they just did their first one on Zoom, very interesting enough, another bit of history there, because boy, that goes way back, that show, and included a what I guess we'd probably agree was a half-assed apology, and that was more than good enough, and I'm going to play that for you actually here, but there's some things I want you to think about. Part of it, because the thing I went on about all the time was the Beats, right? And I want you to listen to their explanation of who the Beats were and see how close you think they came to the Beats, okay? So I'll put it in right now. So you listen now, and then I'll be right back after that to follow up a bit. Just listen here.
So I figured we could get everyone's little COVID updates, but before we do, I thought we should start with our traditional segment, Keith Apologizes to Someone. So I'd just like to give an official apology to our good friend Scarborough Dude, because in the other podcast I do, my writing podcast, I was just talking about dialogue and like, oh, here's a good way to think of dialogue. Like, don't write one-sided dialogue where someone's just talking and talking, because that's annoying in a book and it's annoying in real life. And at the same time, I was editing the last episode of Vinyl Countdown, where it was me and Joel and Scarborough Dude. So he was on my mind. It's a nice thing in a way. I was thinking about him. But I was like, yeah, like that podcast.
And this apology is going great.
I didn't bring him up by name, but it was obviously him. I was like, for example, I know this one guy who he just always wants to talk about the Beat Generation and the Beats. And he's been talking about the Beats ever since I met him. He's still talking about them. And yeah, obviously, Scarborough Dude, when he heard that, was like, well, fuck you.
I love that that's his reaction. He's just like, oh, I can come for you too, young man.
Yeah. So it's just, yeah, I mean, it's unfair to single out Scarborough Dude. He was just on my mind because I was editing that podcast at the time. But I mean, obviously, we all got our things. Like, I was thinking just today, my thing is definitely pro wrestling. Like, my dad just had his 70th birthday yesterday, and I feel like I should hang out with him a little and talk to him. It's just hard and awkward because we just don't have a good rapport. So today I'm like, hey, Dad, did you hear Monday Night Raw has the lowest rating ever because of COVID? And it's like, he doesn't care, but it's always what I want to talk about is wrestling. And I'm making this poor old man listen to me. So yeah, that's all. I just want to say, Scarborough Dude, you're not so bad. We're all like that. We all do that. And you also do that. And that's my apology.
I think some people do it more than others, and you also do it more than others. So you guys are both just so annoyed that you don't have the majority of the conversation be about something to talk about.
The conch.
Yeah, there's no question. Me and Scarborough Dude are very similar in a lot of ways. Like, every time I start getting too yelly, when I hear myself back, I'm like, man, I sounded just like when Scarborough Dude starts yelling about something.
And can I say that I have never heard of the Beat Generation. I don't know what that is. I've never heard that phrase before, and except for Scarborough Dude. And then I haven't.
Really?
So I don't know what it is. I don't know what he's talking about. I have no idea. Can someone tell me? Okay. So I don't have to Google it.
Really? Katie, do you know what it means?
Isn't it like hipsters? Like,
basically, yeah. Kind of the first hipsters.
Yeah. It's like pre-hippies. Yeah.
I assume like they're like, they like listening to like poetry. Yeah. And, like, yeah. Snapping yeah. their fingers and like wearing like beatniks.
Bob Dylan was in the Beat Generation, right?
Oh yeah, I would say Bob Dylan is right. Yeah, and it's like all those authors, like that book Walden, and yeah. The guy who wrote what's the Holden Caulfield book, Catcher in the Rye. Like all those. I mean, I fucking right. love that shit. When I was in high school, all I read were books by that generation because I loved it.
Yeah, she carries a Catcher in the Rye book with her wherever she goes.
There it is. It probably is the book I've read the most.
Man, I remember I read Catcher in the Rye. Wow.
Okay, you caught that. So, you heard some things. The Beats were hipsters. And I guess if we don't think about the way hipsters are defined now, because often when we hear the word hipsters, we think of phonies. And, of course, there were a lot of phonies way back then. But I guess they were hip to the jive, hip to black music, hip to jazz, you know. So that's not so far off. You're going to give them that. And then somebody else said pre-hippies. Okay, yeah, good. You got the time frame right. Good. That's important. Because they were the ones, as I've said, on and on and on, paved the way for the hippies. You know, without the Beats, there wouldn't have been a hippie movement. That's I just maintain that's true. Then we heard Bob Dylan was in the Beat Generation. Now, I'm going to give half marks. If I was a teacher marking a paper on this, right, I'd put a check mark beside the Beats for hipsters. Pre-hippies, yeah, okay, bam, you get a mark there. Two marks, depending on what it's worth. Bob Dylan was in the Beat Generation. I think I'd kind of circle that one. You want to give him almost half a point. Okay. Bob Dylan was heavily influenced by the Beats, and his lyrics and his early songs, his poetry, that's kind of Beat infused. And there's that famous picture of Allen Ginsberg and Bob Dylan sitting at the grave of Jack Kerouac. So I'd give that student, I'd give more than half a mark. I'd give a mark. You're incorrect, but you got part of it. You made a connection. That was a fair connection. Now, somebody else, and I believe it was Michael, said, oh, yeah, poetry, jazz, snapping fingers, beatniks, and check marks for that. Good for you. Now, the only thing we just want to be clear about beatniks, they didn't call themselves beatniks. Beatniks was, excuse me, a term the press came up with, which was meant to be insulting. It was like, this is the time of Sputnik, 1957, when that was launched. And it was meant sort of to lump the Beats in with the communists. You know, okay, they're probably, you know, commies as well. They're everything else antisocial. So it was a pejorative term. But, you know, he was right. People, and today people sort of mix the two together. Beats, beatniks, it's all the same. So you want to correct it, but you also want to say, okay, you're not far off. Now, the only one that really I found very startling was, I read all those guys, and we included Catcher in the Rye about Holden Caulfield, written by J.D. Salinger, as you know. But I guess I would think that Salinger would probably be almost the opposite of a beat figure. Like, he was a loner. He didn't want to have anything to do with anybody. And, yeah, you know, you want to encourage the students. Okay, I guess you can see the character of Holden Caulfield is just, you know, he's an oddball, an outcast. But he was 16, and the Beats were sort of, they were adults. And yeah, you know, I'm going to circle that. I'm going to say, I'm sorry. I'm really sorry. Neither the writer nor the character are Beat at all. But I can see if a young person being impressed by this book. What's most surprising, not one person ever mentioned the names Jack Kerouac, or the book On the Road, or the name Allen Ginsberg, the name I'm putting forth all the time. So it's like, oh my God, my work hasn't even begun. But, of course, yeah, nobody cares, dude. Nobody cares. So, okay, now here, the glaring one, the one where we're going to get, you know, the red pen comes out for this. Authors like that guy who did Walden. Now, again, I guess the connection they've made is he dropped out of society, and maybe I guess a lot of people think the Beat sort of dropped out of society. Okay, there's a connection. But the interesting thing about Walden by Thoreau was that it was published in 1854, like 100 years before the Beats. The Beats are sort of reaching a character. On the Road, I think, was published in 57. It had been written long before then, and they were doing their thing from the late 40s on. I'm sorry. I got to get myself a cough lozenge here, and I just happen to have some fisherman's friends. Here's the problem. Okay, hang on while I do this, would you? I'm in the middle of marking. This is the way, this is what our friend Steve in Halifax does all the time. Marks and complains about it. Hang on. Here we go. Throat loss and fisherman. These are years old. They're starting to decay. Sorry, Candace, but you're not listening anyway. So Walden, published 1854. I did, you know, I had to check on that date. I have a copy, actually, here in my road trek. I'm going to read just a little blurb, just while we're passing along information, and there's nothing wrong with learning something. First published in 1854, Walden details Thoreau's experiences over the course of 2 years, 2 months, and 2 days in a cabin he built near Walden Pond amidst woodland owned by his friend and mentor, Ralph Waldo Emerson, near Concord, Massachusetts. Now, that is very near Lowell, Massachusetts, Kerouac's hometown. And the last time I went, most of the people who visit Lowell for the Kerouac gathering also go to Walden. I didn't. Next time I go, if I go, because I'm no longer really a big fan of Kerouac anymore. I don't know. Other people have taken his place. And I've got mixed feelings about going to that thing with the Kerouac devotees and reading out from his book and doing their poetry. And I'd feel like, hey, I'm an imposter here. He's just, I've lost respect for Kerouac, I guess. And it's been a long, slow decline really in my admiration. I guess as a young man, yeah, okay. He was a guy who's laid out a roadmap, drop out and do your own thing. But he just far too many failings. I guess I almost haven't forgiven him for his alcoholic decline. Now, who am I to say that? Oh, my God. I don't dare Poultice. I follow every day Kerouac fan groups and so on. And I'd be thrown out. But anyway, let's get back to Walden. Sorry. Thoreau used his time, July 1845 until 1847, to write his first book, A Week on the Concord and Merrimack Rivers, published 1849. The experience later inspired Walden, in which Thoreau compresses the time into a single calendar year and uses passages of four seasons to symbolize human development. Uh-huh. The book can be seen as a performance art. That's interesting. I didn't know that. A demonstration of how easy it can be to acquire the four necessities of life. Now, let's stop here. What are the four necessities of life? Some of you will be shouting out the answer right away. Air, water, food, shelter. That is one answer. The other answer that sort of goes along with this book was food, shelter, clothing, and fuel. That's what Thoreau thought were the essentials. Food, shelter, clothing, fuel. Fuel just to stay warm in the winter. Okay. Once acquired, those four basics, he believed people should then focus their efforts on personal growth. Wow. 1854. So we're talking 150 years ago. A guy talking about personal growth. By immersing himself in nature, Thoreau hoped to gain a more objective understanding of society through personal introspection. Simple living and self-sufficiency were Thoreau's other goals, and the whole project was inspired by transcendentalist philosophy, a central theme of the American Romantic period. Now, that sounds like a university-level quote. I didn't know that, and I haven't yet read the book. I've always thought this is a perfect thing to bring with me camping, but I've got a whole library there of a lot of Zen stuff. And often when I get camping, you don't feel like reading. I feel like having a toke, having a drink, cranking up some music, building a fire. I do read, though. I take that back. When I go to Mossport, I do read. Okay, anyway, that's all. I just wanted to bring you back, and I thank Keith for giving me just a little more content again. I was told by Eric, or suggested by Eric, of the Tip Tap Tip podcast, everybody's favorite, best podcast in suburbs of Calgary, Alberta, or best couple cast. And he said, listen at half speed, then they really sound wasted. But I sped it up just a little bit. Don't know if you noticed. But Keith talked fast. When I put it down to half speed, it still sounded like Keith was talking really quickly. All right, Scarborough Dude, I've enjoyed this little explanation, these little clips. I hope you have too. And there'll be another song to follow. And whether or not, like most of the time, I never even mention the music because I don't know. Often I put it in after I've done all the recording clips. We'll see what happens. So hope you're doing okay. I hope you're staying safe and healthy. I worry about my friends in the States. I really do, because I don't think it's just Canadians wanting to be smug and think we're doing it better. I think we are doing it better here. But, like, we're not a world power. And to be a world power, I guess you have to have revolutionaries and people who don't obey the rules and people who fight for their freedoms and so on. And that comes at a cost. And I think the cost is a lot of people are going to die, a lot more than here and anywhere else. So we'll see. Election coming up in 6 months. Oh boy, is that going to be of interest. Meanwhile, God damn, I wish I could just get in this thing and head off to a campsite and just set up home for a few days. But meanwhile, we have to make do with the driveway, and it's better than nothing. Happy to have the road track. Scabber Dude. Signing off, back at you real soon. Bye for now. Oh, do we need the closing bell? Sure we do.
Heave high, heave high, oh, the best man in Ottawa is Muffaroy Joe. Muffaroy Joe. Big Joe Muffaroy paddling the Manawa all the way from Ottawa in just one day. Hey, hey, on the River Ottawa, the best man we ever saw was Big Joe Muffaroy, the old folks say. Come and listen and I'll tell you what the old folks say. And he seen Big Joe had an old pet frog bigger than a horse and he barked like a dog. And the only thing quicker than a train upon a track was Big Joe riding on a bullfrog's back. Heave high, heave high, oh, the best man in Ottawa was Muffaroy Joe. Muffaroy Joe. Yeah, they say Big Joe used to get real wet from cutting down timber and working out the sweat. And everyone will tell you around Carlton Place the Mississippi dripped off of Big Joe's face. Heave high, heave high, oh, the best man in Ottawa was Muffaroy Joe. Muffaroy Joe. Now Joe had a portage from the Gatineau down to see a little girl he had in Kempville down. He was back and forth so many times to see that gal. The path he wore became the Rideau Canal. Heave high, heave high, oh, the best man in Ottawa was Muffaroy Joe. Muffaroy Joe. Now, Big Joe Muffaroy paddled in the Manawa all the way from Ottawa in just one day. Hey, hey, on the River Ottawa, the best man we ever saw was Big Joe Muffaroy, the old folks say. Come and listen and I'll tell you what the old folks say. And he say Big Joe put out a forest fire halfway between Renfrew and Old Ironbrier. He was 50 miles away down around Smith Falls, but he drowned out the fire with 5 spitballs. Heave high, oh, the best man in Ottawa was Muffaroy Joe. Muffaroy Joe. Oh, there's all kinds of tall tales about Big Joe. Get this one. He jumped in the Calabogie Lake real fast. He swam both ways to catch a cross-eyed bass. But he threw it on the ground and said, I can't eat that. So he covered it over with Mount St. Pat. Heave high, oh, the best man in Ottawa was Muffaroy Joe. Muffaroy Joe. Yeah, and he saved Big Joe, drank a bucket of gin, and then he beat the living tar out of 29 men. And high on the ceiling of a Pembroke pub, there's 29 boot marks and they're signed with love. Heave high, oh, the best man in Ottawa was Muffaroy Joe. Muffaroy Joe. Big Joe Muffaroy paddled in the Manawa all the way from Ottawa in just one day. Hey, hey, on the River Ottawa, the best man we ever saw was Big Joe Muffaroy, the old folks say. Come and listen and I'll tell you what the old folks say. They say, heave high, ho, the best man in Ottawa was Muffaroy Joe. Muffaroy Joe. Big Joe Muffaroy, Big Joe Muffaroy, Big Joe Muffaroy. Thank you so much.
Yeah, that was Stompin' Tom Connors live at the Horseshoe Tavern in Toronto, right down on Queen Street. Been there, and I've seen Stompin' Tom. I believe he's sleeping with the fishes now, is he? God damn, I should know that. His name doesn't come up in the news much, but you gotta love the guy. There's a Canadian, a guy who didn't go south for fame and riches, and good chance he wouldn't have made it anyway. But we love him up here, and I love that particular song, Big Joe Muffaroy, all the way from Ottawa. And he does a lot of good goofy songs, but it's just great fun. Okay, all right. So I have no notes whatsoever. I'm sitting in the road trek. It is Thursday afternoon. I am still watching movies. Two, maybe three a day anyway. And I still do the same thing. I wait for the right scene to come up on the screen. I pause it. I get out my camera and I take a shot and then I post it on Twitter and I do some research. You know, I'll go to, usually it's just Wikipedia to find out something about the film. Like today, I watched one. I recorded it last night. Like, I'll go through, I'll scan through all the channels that have movies, you know, over a 24-hour period. And I'll just, okay, record this, record this, record this. And some I've got a backlog now, and some I may never get around to watching, like Charade with Audrey Hepburn. I love that movie, but I've seen it so many times, I don't really need to watch it again. But it's a classic, you know, I might anyway. But this one, Phantom of Chinatown, I think it was. Something like that. And it was about a Chinese detective. Here, I could find the tweet by the name of Wong, of course. And the part of the Chinese detective, it was a series. They ran a whole bunch of them, you know, these fairly low-budget detective things, was always by, played, the character, was played by Boris Karloff. And this one was the very first one where it was played by Key Luke. And I remember Key Luke from, oh, gosh, a lot of old movies back in the 40s. And this is when China were the good guys, unlike today where Trump and China are exchanging nasty messages back and forth of who's to blame for COVID-19 or the disasters that followed. Anyway, so I remember Key Luke, and so I was just keen to watch it. And this is the first time he actually got to play the part of sleuth James Lee Wong. And you think, my God, yeah, that's America. They'd have Boris Karloff, the guy who played Frankenstein, playing the part of a Chinese detective, probably because he could fake an accent. So anyway, it was enjoyable. But what was really interesting, they had a female, good and attractive female, who played the part of a good Chinese, worked for the Chinese government. They had to recover. It was where the oil deposits were of the secret, and they really needed that. China needed that oil, and so it was for the sake of the nation they were going to do this thing. And her name was, Lotus Long. In the picture, although it sounded like they pronounced it Wong. But it turns out her real name was Lotus Shibata. She had a Japanese father and a Hawaiian mother. And for her to get an acting career, she changed it and passed herself off as Chinese and got these parts. And I guess eventually it was found out. But she did that so that she wouldn't be put into the internment camps during World War II, which happened to all the other Japanese Americans, sorry. And I thought that was fascinating. Little bit of information that you can, you know, Google and find. Oh, yeah, hey, that's kind of interesting. And then later on, she played the main role in Tokyo Rose, and that's a film that I also probably talked about when I first started recording all these videos. So it's still going on. I'm right in the middle of the Hindenburg now, which got just absolutely terrible reviews. But there's always something in a movie you can enjoy and you can get lost in. And you know, if it's a little weak, I'll have my iPad beside me. I can, you know, do a little research or something else. But it has been great, great fun. I've also just listened to episode 300 of Drunk Ex-Pastors. I've mentioned before that I've listened to these guys. It's a weird one. Sorry, here I go. I get in the car and I cough. People aren't worried about my cough, but it's just a cough. The byline is culture, politics, religion, Bieber. Bieber is just things that annoy them. And I find it good. This one was 2 hours and 23 minutes, episode number 300. The topic for the particular episode, evangelicalism, conspiracy theories, and let's see what else. I don't know. But an awful lot about Trump's America and the moral obligation to vote for Biden. And one of them is a vegan and how that fits his views. So they do have different opinions. It's not just guys talking fluff. There's a lot of that in there. There's a lot of irreverence. And I know, I'm not saying this because I expect somebody listening to this is going to go and tune those guys in. You'd have to have an awful lot of time. But for me, it's a window into America. And I'm just fascinated by everything going on. And when I listen to my friends' podcasts, our new American friends, part of this circle, this group that we all belong to, very loosely connected, it's not about politics very often. It's often an avoidance of what's going on because people are just too bloody depressed by the Trump world. But these guys get right into it. They hammer away at it. And it's fascinating stuff for me anyway. All right. So that brings us up to date. I have a new one here. Good number 488, the brightness of solar thingamajig by our good friend Tennessee Jason, which I haven't listened yet. That'll be my reward after this. And what else is going on? I am actually doing some work for this Corona Palooza Cowboy Edition podcast I'm going to put out. I just chopped out another couple of songs. They weren't needed. And I'm actually doing a little research and just having fun with it. And I hope very soon to be sending that in. Don't know when it'll be aired. Jason takes, you know, has everything lined up and numbered and so on. So I leave that in his hands. It's been fun. It's a project I'm glad I've taken on. And again, I thank our friend Glenn out in Winnipeg, who I've never met, but he is a follower of the Dixon James podcast. Thank you, Glenn. All right. So where does that leave us? What's been bugging me? Nothing in particular, and yet everything. I mean, again, I went out yesterday and I drove to St. Andrew's Cemetery and thought, okay, I'll just record from here. And then just didn't feel like it. But had I pushed the record button, it would have been a very different bit of content than what you're getting now. So what we're going to do is we're going to stop right now. We're going to stop, and I'm going to come back if I have something to say. Oh, did I just tell you about the song you just heard? Yes, I did. All right, stopping now. I do have a bell in my bag, but there's too many other things in there. I got my coffee mug. I got my Alan Watts Zen book, which is very difficult to read. I tried a little bit while I was getting the tires changed on Naoko's car, which is what I'm sitting in now. And I know why I've abandoned this book before. It's one that Barnacle Bill found, I guess, in the laundry room of his condo and gave it to me last time he was here. And I've got a lot of Alan Watts books that I enjoy. And he's just, when he's at his best, he's amazing and a very interesting man. Again, one of those figures that's forgotten. Or maybe it's just a certain type of people. I don't know who would be interested in Alan Watts today. He's the guy who really brought Zen to the West. For Westerners to understand, people like, Gary Snyder did it on his own. He was on the fringe of the beats. He went over. He's the guy in the Dharma Bums that Kerouac wrote about. Oh, my God, are we going to talk about the beats again? No, we're talking about Alan Watts. I read his biography. It's very, very interesting. Well-educated man, very British, a devotee of Zen Buddhism, and but also an alcoholic. Often they go together. Anyway, I am in St. Andrew's Cemetery once again. It is Friday morning. I had an 8 o'clock appointment for my wife's Mazda to get the winter tires taken off, and an oil change, which was long overdue. And I thought, well, this is a good time to just keep on going. Like, you know, I know so many people are just tired of being stuck at home. So just this, you know, two blocks away is the McDonald's and Tim Hortons. So I got myself a Senior's Mac coffee. And the only place I could get to was this cemetery again. Like, always, I was thinking, where can I go to park? You know, you can't get down to Bluffers Park anymore. Thompson Park's closed. So I'm left staring at this list of dead people, you know, on all these big tombstones. I would never be buried here. This is definitely for mostly Scots people, a lot of the Thompson family, who were the first settlers here, and people who go to the church right behind us. So, no, not where I'd want to be. I'd feel so out of place. dead and cremated, I wouldn't be feeling all that much, but you know what I mean. Just it wouldn't be right. It really would be wrong. Like, it would really bother me. No, please, don't bury me in St. Andrew's Cemetery. Don't get that wrong. Anyway, it's not time for that yet, although I am feeling old. Listen, last night I recorded a gappage with Brent. Now, I haven't listened back yet. I think it was a good one. I think we got to places. It got a little ornery towards the end. I think one of the things about gappage is we have to insult people, or so it seems. Or maybe that's just my take on it. Yeah. Yeah, I say something mean, Brent says something nice, and then he comes out looking like the good guy. That's how it works. Anyway, it was fun. It'd been a long time. This is Brent, the partner I fired years ago. I didn't offer him the job back at all, but it actually was good to reconnect. And this time, unlike the last gappage I recorded with Mark Blevis, you can hear both speakers, me and Brent. So that I'll try and put out today, in fact. And I might even try and put this one out today, too. I don't know. Today, tomorrow, we'll see. And then, as I've mentioned already, I blurted, I can't keep secrets. You know that. I've already started recording the intro to the cowboy songs, Corona Palooza. And a few of the songs, too. So I'm working on that. I'm actually, believe it or not, I'm actually scripting it. And then going off script, of course. But I've made, let's say, detailed notes so that I know. I want to be able to say something about each singer and musician, a little bit about their background. And my God, the stories are so interesting. These early pioneers in the field of country and Western music, these aren't the shining young stars that just show up in Nashville and get a record contract. These guys did it the hard way. I mean, we were talking about a lot of these guys really were hopping freights, working in, you know, cotton fields and growing up in poverty and dealing with, you know, demons like alcohol. This was tough. They did it the hard way. But each story is different. So that's been fun for me, actually doing a little bit of the research. It's the first project in a long time that I've actually taken seriously. God, I'm repeating myself because I think I said this on Gappage. But anyway, it doesn't matter. Let's have a sip of coffee. Not much. I get it with cream. It's not much. Taste is not bad, just nothing special there. The coffee I enjoy the most is the one my wife makes in the morning. And of course, I said I made my own this morning because I was in a rush to get out. She said, well, of course you did. You know, you should. And, no, that's not what I meant. I meant it so much nicer. Not because I'm being lazy and she makes it, but because somehow hers, she grinds the beans and it just tastes better. And it's hot black coffee. My son likes it with sugar, and so she'll make a whole thermos and put it in the fridge for him. So in the morning he can get up and have a cold coffee with sugar. And I take a sip of that. And ooh, how can anybody stand sugar in coffee? Ooh, gah. All right. Listen, I don't know how much time we've got because I have no idea where I left off on the last podcast. I know I recorded yesterday in the road trek or the day before maybe. And God. It's my sister's birthday today, and my her husband, her fourth husband. Ooh, I shouldn't say that. Well, no, she never listens to this anyway. It doesn't matter. Did any of them die? No, I don't think any of them died. Anyway, yeah. So where were we? Yeah, so he's organized a group, a Zoom conference, and it's going to be interesting because there's a nephew who disowned me, like her son, who I was very close to. I mean, we were close. We were tight buddies. He lived in our house for a year before going to Mongolia, like his Uncle Ken traveling. We were tight all our lives, and then something happened after he got married and had a son. I did something wrong, said something wrong, and I have been cut out of the family. And it's tragic and unnecessary, and I'm furious. I'm just, you know, I keep it. I don't say anything. It's very upsetting for his mother. Why? It's her brother and her son can't get along. And she thinks compromise. I'm like, no, hey, he disowned me. And it's so unfortunate. It's so unnecessary. But his wife is from Mexico. And I'm not pointing the finger necessarily. Well, I am pointing the finger a little bit in her direction because it takes two to make these kind of decisions. Myself being a pot smoker and an atheist, I think are two pretty serious counts against me and maybe kind of the influence. And we used to, when I went, I mean, we would drink together back in the old days and just have fun getting nicely buzzed. And that just hasn't happened. And this is, it's gone on for years, but anyway, today is going to be that Zoom call. And of course, he's been invited and I've been invited. And I don't know if he sees my name, he won't get on, or what kind of awkwardness this is going to lead to, whether one of us will have to step off and come back later when the other's not on. I don't know. All unnecessary for me. I'm just going to go and call in at the right time and see what happens. And basically, it'll be up to him. And he will make that call. And if he chooses to, I'll come back later, well, so be it. You will never know, because I'll forget about all this by the time I do the next Dixon Chains podcast. And some of you may be curious, well, how did that go? Well, if that's the case, send me a fucking question. You know, send me a tweet, Scarborough Dude, or no, DixonChains@gmail.com. No, that's my email. Scarborough Dude, just Google Scarborough Dude. You can find me on Twitter, or you can find me on Instagram. Send me a message. Hey, dude, what happened to that Zoom call on your sister's birthday? I mean, well, now that I've already talked about her four husbands, she's going to be 80 next year. 80. Oh, my God. That is just such a mind fuck because this is like, no. That's the age of the old aunts and uncles. And I realize, yeah, that's who we are. We are the old aunts and uncles. When that happens to you, it's not just, oh, I'm an uncle now, but I'm 32 or something. But when you are the old, like that senior, the top generation that's going to die off one by one and it's leveled, you know, the parents are long gone, but there's the aunts and uncles left. And I can remember our own, our Aunt Rosemary, our Aunt Thelma, you know, how much they meant. And they were always special. We were a very small family. My father and his sister were just the two. My aunt Ida Thrasher, my father's mother, came from a family of 10. Those were pioneers in settling in Pembroke on the farm. Came from Ireland. They're the Bowl family, you know, two generations at least before that. So she would have grown up of a big family. My grandmother, the woman I watched Don Messer's Jubilee with, dearly loved her. Kind, gentle old soul. I can still picture her. And, of course, the grandparents are long gone. And Winifred, the opposite, this Victorian lady born and British, English till the day she died, like a big, she was lumpy and smoked cigarettes and would take a drink, was a strong woman, much stronger than her husband, my dear grandfather, Percival, you hear these names, Percival, Winifred, Ida, you know, Herbert. They were wonderful characters and so long gone. And with me dying, there's zero connection to my children. Like, they ceased to exist. They don't know anything about my grandparents. They barely knew my parents because I got married so late. So there's a real loss there of family, other families, and it's something. It's too bad. So my children, they've never lived near aunts and uncles. You know, the way families always got together. They've been very much deprived. My two sons, and of course the other half of the family lives in Japan. And an uncle's father has passed away long, long ago, long before they were born. So there's an uncle there that, fortunately, my eldest son visits, which is good. And his grandmother, who very, very rarely gets to see. So anyway, I'm thinking of things from the past. While I was waiting in the auto shop to have the wheels put on and the oil change, I thought back. I've got these, you know, these random flashes of memory, and I was back in the CN Yards in Point St. Charles, and by God, if there was a chapter in the book, would I love to tell that chapter of working all my summers. I worked every summer while going through university for the CN, including the summer I went to Europe, the winter I went to Europe. And the last few were in the Point St. Charles Yards. Well, that's a very interesting part of Montreal. It was the poor Irish and the French living together. La Pointe was called. And the yards, these are the last of the great big old yards, are these still reconditioned cabooses and made freight car wheels and, you know, a huge industrial complex. And I worked in the lumber yard at the very end where they hired students. And we just had a blast. It was fresh air, 4 months, union wages, working outdoors every day, unloading boxcars full of wood or gondola cars full of boxcar doors. Very dangerous job, working with slings and the big boom crane. And it was fascinating. And the number of people who were like broken down alcoholics who just were, and a bootlegger who just drove around the yards selling Mickeys to the alcoholics who, you know, and who couldn't even get up to punch their card out, you know, at the end of the day. Brinks trucks coming in, loaded with cash, setting up pay stations within the shops so that, because nobody had time to go and cash a check, you'd get your check and then you'd go and line up in front this wire cage. And they would just, bam, hand over the money, hand you the cash. And everybody walked around with the cash. And one guy's money was stolen right out of his pocket. Young guy, looking after his mother. I've told this story before, but most of you won't have heard it. And by that afternoon, they had gone around and collected enough money from people making voluntary donations to give him the full amount of his check. Like, that was just wonderful. These are guys who, you know, every dollar meant something, but still, hey, we probably know the guy who took the money. We couldn't prove it, or, you know, there were probably, I think we knew who. But they collected money, went around, and this guy got his money. Another guy was just a little crazy. And he used to keep his money rolled up in his pocket, like a bundle, a thick bundle with elastic bands. And somebody said, "Hey, Paul, I got more money than you." Paul, "Well, no, you don't." "Oh, yeah? I got more money than you, Paul." And then Paul would reach into his pocket and pull out this wad and show everybody. I don't think he ever lost it. It was, you know, he was a target, but I think they felt so sorry. There was a lot of people not quite mentally right. In there were heavy-duty drugs going on. We did hashish, you know, sometimes on the job and buy and sell it there. But also a couple of speed freaks moved in. Some guys spiked somebody's coffee with LSD, and that was not a good thing. So it was a wild, wild, wild place. But the one thought I had today was an old man called Dolbeck. Never knew him. We just Monsieur Dolbeck. Of course, it was all French-Canadians, right? Or basically, and Irishmen, a couple of Newfoundlanders, Johnny Lynch, who ran the yard, and Italians. And Monsieur Dolbeck had a record collection of thousands of records, and we're able to talk about it. And so here's a man with all these very rough characters, but who was educated and cultured and very, very interesting. And each one was different. And then Marcel Geoffroy, our foreman, who was a tough guy, and poor old Monsieur Lafort, who held two jobs, a security job, because he just was in debt for a lot of money, and sad, sad stories. Anyway, I won't go on anymore, but it's sometimes quite amazing to be able to play the tapes in your head. Oh, yeah. And just let it go. And you just, you're walking through that yard. I went back to visit last time, one of my last trips to Montreal. Got on a bus and went right back to the gates. And, of course, security. And I tried to take pictures and they kept waving me away. And it's just completely shut down a huge piece of land. And that whole area that used to be poor has been gentrified in a nice way with a lot of the original people. But it just looks a lot better. It is no longer the slums of Pointe St. Charles. It's actually quite a nice place now. All right, I think that brings us to an end. Scarborough Dude reliving some memories and really happy about it. And it's maybe quite fitting that I would do that as I'm facing these gravestones in front of me. So tune in next week, listen to Gappage, and then also check out sometime in the not-too-distant future Corona Palooza on the In Your Ear Holes feed, I believe, for some cowboy music. Oh, yeah. I reckon that'll be a lot of fun. Oh, yeah. Scarborough Dude signing out from the cemetery. Oh, yeah. Died with his boots on. Yep. Bye for now.